Gary DePaul with Unlabeled Leadership. Welcome to Episode 3, Ajay Pankajkar and the Responsibility to Shine. Let's get started. Over the years, I've met a fair number of people who have made substantial career changes, from changing from operations to human resources, or being a process engineer and later becoming a carpenter. You know, serious changes like that. While I know of people who have changed their careers, I usually don't meet people who have two careers that are distinct. Ajay is one of those people. Part of what Ajay does is he works in the learning and development field. So it's working with the training function of organizations. He works with them on strategy, balanced scorecard, and things like that. He also has a certification, Certified Training and Development Professional, CTDP, from the Association of Training and Development. In this field, he's received several awards for his work, and he actively teaches instructional designers and trainers. He may teach them at a particular company as part of his job, or you can go on to LinkedIn and see some of the courses that he has listed. And in addition to the training, Ajay's published some books. He's co-authored 3 books so far in the field of learning and development. That's the first side of his career. The other side has to do with finance and accounting and business. Ajay is a fellow of the Chartered Professional Accountants, and he teaches accounting and other business courses at Sprott School of Business. When I read some of his articles on e-learning and training, I couldn't help but notice how expressive and creative his articles are and how analytical they are as well. I don't know what role accounting plays in his writing, but what I do know is he gets the business side of a company, and he also gets the training, learning, and development side and connects the two. It's really impressive. Because of his unique background, I wanted to find out what stories about leadership he could share with us. Part 1, Mentoring is Bidirectional. Bill Daniels, a retired consultant, once told me that he still mentors people. He said that he learns as much from the mentor or mentees as they learn from him. Unlike Bill, Ajay is not retired, but he does mentor people. Here's Ajay's first story.
Quite a while ago, actually, I keep saying not too long ago, but it's probably going on 20 years, I was mentoring a young individual. And one day we were having lunch, and he turned to me and said a phrase that has stuck with me for all of my life. And it just proves to me one thing before I share a phrase, is that, you know, we always look to maybe people senior to us for advice and guidance and sage advice, but we can't forget that young people also can offer a lot of insight to our lives, especially these days. But the one saying that he did share with me that really stuck with me and I tend to visualize was this. He said, if you're not living life on the edge, you're taking up too much space.
Wow.
And so I think the visual is quite impressive, because what he was conveying to me, or maybe the way I interpreted, was that, you know, you really need to push yourself to a point where sometimes it scares you. You need to live at a point where you're always learning and gaining new insights and new knowledge, because it's where it's those spaces where you are not, where you're not comfortable in, that actually teaches you the most about new things and new adventures. And if you stay in your comfort zone, you're not going to grow. And so I take that saying as a very inspirational part of my life.
When you're in your comfort zone, you may learn a little bit, you may add to your knowledge, but outside of your comfort zone, that's where the real learning and development occurs.
That kind of saying, it still sticks with me. I share this with young people and people are all around me. I said, that's my inspiration in life. It's got to scare me. And if I know I'm scared or frightened about something, I need to go headstrong into it, because the worst that can happen is I fail. And even in failure, you can learn something. But if I don't experience it, I'll have that regret of not experiencing it. And so when we are in our comfort zone, you know, it's nice and comfortable. And of course, you know, we're not frightened. Nothing is threatening us. And it's the fight or flight response, right? To me, if I'm not in the fight response, I'm not learning. And so I think it's very important, especially for future leaders or current leaders, to think that way, because people that are following them or watching them by example are taking that away. You know, they're watching these people. If you sit in your comfort zone, you're leading a group of people, I think you're making a big mistake.
We tend to be easy on ourselves to keep ourselves in our comfort zone because that's what we're comfortable about, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's easy,
safe.
Right?
It's safe.
And safe is, in this day and age, by the way, you know, I think you and I both agree that the world is changing significantly. I mean, we're living in some very interesting times these days, but change is constant. It's the only constant that's reality. And so if you are going to sit there in your bubble, and I hate to be blunt here, but if you're going to sit there in your bubble and not want to change with the change, then, you know, you're going to be a relic of the past. And if you want to be that, good for you, but you're not going to be delivering any value for anybody else around you.
I know you're a professor. You teach accounting.
Yep.
And your program, I understand, is virtual. These professors that teach face-to-face who don't want to change, their thinking is, in a few quarters, this will be over and I'll be back to teaching in person. But that may not be the reality ever because expectations of students and other faculty and even the administrators start to change.
It's funny you mentioned that because I just wrote an article for elearningindustry.com called It's E-Learning's Time to Shine. And apparently not. They're not shining at this point. And to your point, mind you, I teach at a university and it was all classroom based until, of course, the pandemic. And now we're both synchronous and asynchronous online, but it's not perfect. But you have to adapt. I mean, you know, as a professor, there's a couple of moments that you have to shine here. One is that you have to adapt to this new reality. That's, I think, one leadership example is that adaptation and not rejecting of it. Because, again, it goes back to that sense of change.
Yeah.
Things are going to change and you need to react to it. And if you're going to say, okay, you know, I got only a few more semesters to go, and well, then maybe you should get out earlier than you expected because you're not doing the people that you are sharing that knowledge with any favors.
Part 2, unaware of our acts of leadership. One of the themes of this podcast is that small, repeated acts of leadership can have monumental change in people, organizations, and even yourself. AJ shares a story that complements this theme. Here's AJ again.
Leadership, I think true leadership, is not about being out front and taking the glory and taking the credit. And again, that's my personal opinion. I believe true leadership takes place when people are not looking. True leadership takes place and the rewards come about when you're not expecting it. True leadership takes place when, you know, people are encouraged to do things and you've influenced them, but you don't even know you did that. It's that last point that's happened to me a lot. I have two leadership styles. One is a leadership by example. You know, whatever I say, I will do. I will be the first in line to do it. And I will not tell people, you know, I'm not the type of person who always says, you know, do as I say, not as I do kind of thing. I'm the one who actually does it. And the second one is I lead by a degree of empathy. I have a significant degree of empathy for people in their situational environment. And recently, I was leading a major department within the government of Canada. I had a pretty significant team. Of course, I'm at the top of the ladder, and there's a couple of layers of management under me. And one of the people reporting to my managers actually reached out to me and learning that I was leaving the department because my mandate was only temporary. She reached out and she says, "You don't know how much stress I've been under." And I said, "Okay." I said, "I think I do." I said, "I've talked to your manager and all that." And I said, "I know the situation." She goes, "You have helped me cope with the stress." And I said, "Well, okay, I appreciate that, but I'm not sure what I did." She goes, "No, you've listened to me, you've reached out to me, you've encouraged me to do certain things that were in the benefit of my well-being and my spirit, which changed my mind about leaving the department. With leaders like you," she called it emotional intelligence, "but with that quality allowed me to relieve that stress and move forward and do better in my job." And I'm like, "Okay, well, I appreciate that, but I think you're giving me too much credit." It's those kind of moments that you don't realize the kind of influence you have over people.
Yeah. And the lead by empathy seems like something natural for you. And it seems like a way of connecting with the people you work with.
again, you know, we have this brainwashed attitude about leadership as being up front and stating commands and hopefully people just, you know, follow it. To me, that's not a leader.
Yeah.
That empathy, that connection that you, like you stated, that connection with people is so important. I mean, they have to trust you. You know, trust is a significant portion here. And it's not easily gained. It's significantly earned. People will forgive you if you've done things that, you know, maybe went the wrong way, but were unintentional. But it's that degree of empathy that you realize where they're coming from. You understand the context. You frame it where they can cope and they can do things. You know, I always encourage failure. I love encouraging failure. I don't know why people don't encourage more failure, because I think that's where the greatest learning takes place. I mean, I don't want people to fail and feel bad. Don't get me wrong. But if you have to fail, do it, and you'll learn something new out of it.
That's reality. What I mean by that is we do stuff, we fail. We do stuff, we fail. We do stuff, we fail. Things don't work out great, but we continue to learn, and we learn from failures. Some people call failures learning. The reality part is when you're reading Facebook messages and things like that, you're getting all the successes, but you're not seeing all that went on behind all that.
It's funny because, you know, you and I have known each other for a significant amount of years, Gary, and although we've never maybe been regularly in touch, we've had a great deep respect for each other, but I've been doing this for about 25 plus years now. And people look at me today and say, well, you know, Ajay, you've had, you know, you've published books and you're on radio and you do broadcast media and you write on and on and on and on. It strokes my ego. Fantastic. But I remind them, I said, you know, to get to this moment or to get to these moments, there were a lot of blood, sweat, and a lot of tears behind the scenes that to get to this moment. And I remind them, especially young people who look at me with this sort of, when I teach in the CPA program as well, they look up to me and see my successes, and I have to remind them, I said, look, these successes didn't happen overnight, and I still experience failure. For everything that you see out there, like you said, Gary, you know, you see the posts of the successes, I need to remind you that you need to scratch below the surface to find out the truth. Then you see the real person. And if they're not willing to share that with you, then they're not being truly authentic with you.
You know, I love your story because it's a good example of someone along the journey that may be experiencing stress, whether personal stress from family or whatever, and just taking some interest in that person, showing that you're checking in with the person, makes a huge difference and actually gives that person the opportunity to relieve some of that stress. Just the empathy part of it, someone's under stress, being able to empathize with that and talking about it is a way of addressing the stress and the source of the stress.
It's funny you mentioned that because, and I really want to see people successful. I do not want to see anybody fail, but there's an instance that's happened in this the continuation of this story I didn't share with you beforehand. My mandate with them is ending. It was only temporary anyways. It was meant to help them do certain things. I won't get into the details, but the role I was in, that leadership role, was temporary. And subsequently, there was supposed to be somebody else coming in behind me, which they found, a new director, and that's fine. And I was never meant to be in that position in the first place. But the new director came in, and I shared all my knowledge with him and making sure that I want to see a success. But I've been getting feedback from the team informally, and I tell them, I said, you can't come to me. You have to go to this, your new leader here, your new manager or director. But they come to me informally and say, you know, we miss you. And I'm like, why? You know, so-and-so is supposed to be, you know, your director. And he goes, yeah, but there's just something missing. Mm. And I'm like, well, what is missing? He goes, well, he's checking off the boxes. I said, what do you mean by checking off the boxes? He goes, well, he's doing his checklist, making sure. He's covering his butt. I was going to say another word, but he's covering his butt. Right? He's covering the checklist and making sure everything is done so he looks good in the eyes of his boss. And they tell me that, well, you know, Ajay, you never did that. I said, well, because I'm here to lead this department and be successful. I said, yes, I was checking off boxes too, probably. But I said, at the end of the day, I can't just be checking off boxes without knowing how the team is doing and where they need to go. The realization is that I don't want this person to fail, this new director to fail. I want them to be successful, but, you know, I'm not going to force my advice on them. But at the end of the day, it was nice to get that reflection from people saying, we missed you, because there was a degree of empathy or quality that I brought to the table. And I don't want to stroke my ego here, Gary, by no means. I really don't, because I don't think I'm far from being perfect. But
you're describing something very important, and that's one of the underlying beliefs of leadership, and that's putting others first. And there's a belief that's wrapped around it. Giving credit for accomplishments to others is more important than taking credit.
It is. I think you need to realize, if you really want to be a success in your life, the rewards will eventually come to you, but don't look for them for that immediate gratification. Let people shine around you. Because the one important thing, especially when I mentor young people, I said, you don't know what people are saying behind your back. And I don't mean they're gossiping about you. It's that reputation you leave behind, the ghost of yourself. Once you leave, what is that ghost saying? What are people saying about that ghost that you've left behind? And what I mean by that is that reputation that you left, that quality. Are they saying, well, you know, he or she couldn't make a decision, or they were indecisive, or they always took credit, or blah, blah, blah. Or are they saying positive things about you? You want them to, it's almost like, you know, I hate to say this, Gary, but it's almost like your eulogy at your funeral, right?
Yeah. Well, in a sense, yeah, I can see, yeah. I can see that. That reputation that you leave when you leave behind, that reputation is your character.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's really important that people think that way. And too many people are looking for that immediate gratification, take credit for that success. It's like, who cares? If it was a success, be happy it was a success. Who cares who takes credit for it? Eventually you'll be recognized for things that you do. And I get calls from people now, like other companies or other organizations say, you know, so-and-so spoke about you and we'd like you to come in and see what you can do for us. That's that ghost that I was talking about. That's that reputation that people are saying things behind my back that are very positive. And it's loudly to leadership.
Part 3, rethinking our conversations. We always have room to improve our skills, and communication is an area that we ought to revisit every so often. Like going to a doctor, we should occasionally get a checkup on how we converse. Here's Ajay with our checkup.
One thing, and I've had trouble doing this myself, I had to learn this over the years, is listen. You need to just, excuse me being blunt, Gary, but you need just to shut up and listen. When I'm leading teams or being involved in a team, it's all about hearing what people have to say and listening to the challenges, listening to the problems, and even the successes. I'm always talking about the challenges and problems, but just listen. And even if you don't have a solution, trust me, one of my mentors taught me this. If you just listen to people, they'll just think you're the gift beyond belief, because rarely do people listen anymore. And if you just sit there and listen to what they have to say, they'll walk away just, you know, thinking, wow, this is great. You know, and most of the time, a lot of people want to vent, right? They just want to get things off their chest. You need to give them that outlet. You are that sounding board. Just take it in. If you're going to be a real leader, then you need to listen to the people around you. That's number one. A leader is about that. I always differentiate leader and management, right? Mm-hmm. Leadership is about doing the right things, management is about doing things right, and leadership is about doing the right things. So it's not to sit and shuffle paper. Your role is to get out there and motivate those people. And then not to be the cheerleader, but it's not to go, you know, way to go, Pete, way to go, Sarah, whatever. It's not that. It's about hearing them out. And then show a degree of empathy. That's the second tip.
That's you. That's just what you've been talking about with the lead by empathy. You know, a flag for you, not meaning you, anyone who's in management, if you're coming up with all the ideas, you're generating the ideas, but your people are not, then that's a sign that you're not listening. Your team are the ones that should be coming up with the solutions. Your role is more guiding them and bringing them together and offering your input as well.
Oh, Gary, you are so on point. I don't know how often I see people not like engaging their team. If you want buy-in, this is an old salesperson's trick, right? Mm. I used to work in industrial sales when I first started my career. My boss, who was a lovely man, taught me a lot. In reflection, all the stuff, he will never know how much he taught me, talk about leadership. It's a philosophy I use even in my marriage. Sell them what they want to buy, not what you want to sell. again, another saying that stuck with me is basically has helped me engage in proper discussion, not arguments. Because if you want to get buy-in from people, you need to get them involved. You need to hear their ideas. You need to incorporate what they have to say. And once you incorporate that, you have them. And again, as you said, Gary, you listen to those ideas. You have them because now they're vested into it, right? They have to make it a success. If it's your idea solely, they couldn't care less if you succeed or fail.
If it is solely your idea that you're putting out there to the team, then you're right. There's not a sense of ownership, but what happens to the team is they start to turn off.
Yeah.
Tell me what to do, boss. Just tell me. You know, you got to figure it out.
Well, that's a scary statistic. I don't know if you noticed, it's very high. 60 or 70% of people in their work are disengaged. They're sitting in the desk, doing their job, moving a pencil, whatever it is, pressing a keyboard, but they're not vested into it. It's worse to have that kind of employee than somebody who says, I quit, I'm going off to do something else. They're not bought in. And so that level of engagement is key. You know, work is a four-letter word, I always say. They're going to show up for 9 to 10 or 12 hours sitting at their desk now even worse, virtually, not even with a social environment, to sit there and be committed. And it's like, you better get them engaged and find out why, get them, you know, at least interested in why they have to sit there for 8 or 10 hours doing something that, you know, they may or may not believe in.
My thanks to Ajay. To learn more about him, go to our show notes for links. If you have any questions you want to ask about the show, go to unlabeledleadership.com and click the message button. You have about 1 minute to leave a message with a question or a statement. Maybe I'll play it on the air. Also, go to iTunes, if you would, and leave a comment. Leave a comment about something in the show that's helped you, and maybe I'll share that as well. Most importantly, thank you for listening, and lead on.